Welcome to the Heritage Hub podcast presented by the Marion County Public Library. Here's your host, James Spragans.
Welcome. This is James Spragans, your host again. I believe this is my eighth episode of our little podcast, which emanates from the Marion County Public Library here on Main Street in Lebanon, Kentucky, of the Heritage Hub. My guest is a good friend of mine and somebody that has a passion, and I'm always interested in people who can communicate in an interesting way what, I don't want to say obsession, but a passion of theirs. Steve Brady is from Marion County and comes generally from the St. Joe area and has spent a lifetime collecting Indian rocks and artifacts and studying the area, generally Marion County. He's into the geology, the history, and lights up when we talk about things like an old mill or some artifacts that he has found and what it means about the history, the pre-settlement, pre-white settlement history, I guess you'd say, of Marion County. And all my life, I've heard about the lagoons. Some people say lagoons. I don't really know anybody that says the lagoons, but, and it's always been, and what I'm talking, what that always meant to me was that vast flat area around St. Joe, but it really goes a lot further than that. Crosses 68, goes, I guess, as far as Bravertsville. And we'll talk about some of the parameters of it, but I'll ask Steve several things, one of which is, why do they call it that? Whenever I think of a lagoon, I think of something in a tropical area that's probably salt water. I can't think of any other places that, around here that you'd call a lagoon. But anyway, we're going to talk a lot about that and talk about some of the geologic events that maybe shaped that area and some other interesting things that that Steve has found in his research and in a lifetime of collecting and just trying to learn. So let's start very broadly, Steve, my friend. If we could talk about, do you say lagoons, lagoons? What do you say? Or do you say the lagoon?
I say lagoons. And okay. And I think that it's been a while, but I think lagoons is French for marshland, but I'm not positive, but somewhere I heard that. James is conducting this interview and our podcast, and what I'd like to do, I've kind of made notes, which is quite lengthy, and we have an hour here, and I think what I'll do is read through my first few pages, my notes, my opening remarks, and then I'll run into Professor Gilson's notes that he made in 1956 when he published a book on the geology of Marion County.
You are referring to Willard Rouse Gilson, and just by chance, I have a copy that belonged to my father. You have a copy that your wife gifted you. Your brother-in-law owns a copy. There were only 100 ever printed in 1956. Tell us who Willard Rouse Gilson was, briefly.
He was a professor at the University of Kentucky and also Transylvania and one other college. He was a prolific writer, did the geology all over the state of Kentucky, also an instructor, wrote a lot of political ads, political articles on politicians.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. And his focus was geology of Kentucky, I guess. I noticed the bibliography that's at the front of this book. This is only in 1956, this was only the latest of a few dozen books going back to 1919. So he had been writing about the geology of Kentucky for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I think he was born in 1890 and died in 1975. In 1953, he actually published his initial findings about the lagoons, and then it was republished again a couple of years later in 1956. But in that first edition, he remarks that there's not another site in Kentucky like the lagoons, and he goes on to say that in fact there's only a few places on the entire planet.
Oh, wow.
That have the makeup and geography of the lagoons here in Marion County.
Okay, well, briefly tell me, or I don't mean to say briefly, what exactly are we talking about here? Is this an ancient lake that has dried up? Is this a lake bed? What is the lagoons?
It is a lake bed. We'll get into the origins of how it was created here in a few minutes. It was caused by the Belltown Fault originally, and we don't know exactly when that happened.
Created or the draining of it was caused by the Belltown Fault?
The Belltown Fault, which is that line of knobs that goes from McElroy Pike all the way over to 49, there's a row of knobs there, and you can see that. We'll talk about that again in a minute, but the best place to view that would be on a Google Earth. And I would recommend looking at that from a southern point, looking toward the city of Lebanon. And you'll notice that that fault line, which is about halfway down where the new cut is on 49, goes all the way across.
So roughly where the Hampton, the hotel is, or a little bit past that?
No, it's where the new cut, where the new road is. As you go down, I think I'm right on this. If you go from Main Street out toward Bradfordsville on 49, you'll go through. You'll go out to that area where the new cut is, and you'll see the rock ledges on the left. When you get down, when you get out there, about 2.7 miles, maybe 2.8. And I'm not a geologist, but I think I'm pretty close on this. I know that's where the fault ends or started. You'll notice the laminate rock on your left, and there's a slight, maybe a 5% grade, downward grade on it. But when you get on down that hill, just about three-quarters of the way down, you'll notice another group of rocks, ledges that are about 15% grade. So somewhere in there, there's a break. But anyway, you want me to?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I'll go on and read through this, and then we'll get in more details on the lake and on the fall. The lagoons are an interesting part of the terrain and geography here in Marion County. Being so close to St. Joe as I was growing up, I was often in and around many parts of the lagoons, fishing and hunting or searching for arrowheads. Native artifacts were abundant on the high grounds around the lagoons and the Rolling Fork. In the early 1960s, I would often fish in Knob Creek and the Knob Creek area that drained into the Rolling Fork, and in the early spring, I would often encounter baby pike fish and lamprey fish. Some people call them eels, but they're actually a fish, spawning in the creek, which was odd because I never caught a pike out of the Rolling Fork, and I never otherwise would see a lamprey in the Rolling Fork River. Also, in the river's curve behind St. Joe Church, where I often fished, a large log protruded from the bank about 12 feet down from the bottom land surface and about 4 or 5 feet up from the water. It went straight back in into the ground. And I often wondered how in the world I think that log might have gotten there. And I looked at it, and I thought it might be a walnut log. I wasn't sure, but my Uncle Bobby told me later it was, and it was there just like when he was a child. And then sometimes during the early 1960s, my grandmother, Josephine Morris Brady, told me her grandfather, Frank Martin, had bought a small farm on Clear Creek after he returned from the Civil War and built a house and a summer kitchen for his wife and family. This is located where the current alpaca farm is today. And Frank, during that time, dug a well on that property and got down about 20 feet. And at the same time he hit the water table, he also encountered a huge log lying flat. Other family members that looked at it thought it must be massive and maybe guessed that it's 6 or 7, 6 foot diameter. But that's all I know about that. But I do know that Ernest Brady cleaned that well out in the 1920s, another relative of mine, and he further investigated the log when he got down to it, and he also determined that it was a walnut log as well.
Which you said, and I don't mean to interrupt, you said you could tell that the bark was still on it, right?
The one in the bottoms that I personally saw, still where it came right out of the dirt, there was still some bark that it was still on the log itself, but buried. Okay, and in the mid-1960s, I recall J.E. Bickett telling me that the lagoons had once been covered in water, and there had been some sort of lake in that area. And at that time, I just didn't think to ask him, where he gathered that information, but he had some knowledge of that, but nobody else I ever ran into ever did know that. I later learned that there are two aquifers. J.E. also said there was a large aquifer under the lagoon bottoms. And I later learned that there are two aquifers, one at about 15 or 16 feet, and apparently a very large one at 50 feet.
Just to be clear, an aquifer, we're talking an underground reservoir.
Yeah, gotcha. Water table.
Okay, held in by the limestone or whatever is, okay, yeah. Gotcha.
I later found out J.E. Bickett had drilled several wells in the area, and he had also drilled one for Darrell Shoemaker, which was at the 50-foot depth, so I know that's accurate. My wife, Donna Mattingly, knew I'd always expressed special interest in the origin and history of the lagoons. In the early 2000s, she presented me with a rare book on the geology of Marion County on my birthday. There were a mere 100 copies printed, and it was published by Professor Willard Ralph Yellowstone in 1956 when he was with the University of Kentucky, and contained a chapter on the lagoons in his research. And that was a eureka moment for me. Sure enough, it was a site to an ancient lake that went up Rolling Fork Valley from St. Joe to Bradfordsville. At this point, I will refer to Professor Jellison's research as he is the educated professional, and I have some closing remarks to follow up on his work. In the southwestern part of Marion County, 1 to 3 miles west and northwest of Newmarket, there's a broad, flat lowland in the valley of the Rolling Fork River that has long been known locally as the Lagoons. Field altitudes within this area have a narrow range of 595 to 605 altitude. The lagoons are bordered on the northeast by the main channel of the Rolling Fork, and on the southwest by a deviously meandering slew of creek size, which may, depending on the time of year and weather, be sluggishly flowing, stagnant, or dry. Throughout this area of about 2.5 square miles, there are no stones or gravel in the fields, only deep, silty, sandy loam. In these several respects, the lagoons differ from all other agricultural land in the county and prompt inquiry as to what geological circumstances produce them. Geology of the area provides a good, reasonable, and dependable explanation as to the origins of the lagoons. Pertinent facts as to the present-day outcrop, coupled with a hypothesis as to the formation and extinction of the lake, though to some who may not be well informed as to the physical characteristics of the area, it may appear startling. There can no doubt that this broad lowland was once not too long ago, as geological time is now reckoned, a freshwater lake. Many wells drilled for the waters in the lagoons reveal that this particular area is underlain by an immense deposit of mud, sand, and gravel, ranging from 20 to 35 foot thick. Round about the lagoons on the upstream are numerous high-level flats, rock-cut shelves bordering the lagoonal area, and the inner valley of the river. The village of Newmarket, at 630 to 660 foot altitude, is located on one of these high flats. Calvary and the broad area south of the river, similar altitudes, is another, to which may be added the high flatland of the Greenbrier and adjoining neighborhoods. These high flats bordering the inner valley are old lake terraces cut in or across. We'll talk more about that in a minute. So it is with the Rolling Fork River, which during a very long time has been flowing in essentially its present course geographically, but at considerably higher levels. Toward the end of the Pleistocene or glacial period, the river flowing in the vicinity of the Narrows and the St. Joe Bridge of today crossed the Belltown Fault, then a rather minor disturbance of perhaps 25 or 30 foot of displacement. Its channel level then was about 670 foot altitude, a little less than the ridge upon which the village of St. Joe is now seated. Regional structural adjustment in this part of the Ohio Valley caused a secondary slip of the south or down-dropped block of the Belltown Fault of about 30 to 35 feet, bringing the total displacement of this disturbance to about 60 feet, which is measurable near the Narrows. The secondary faulting not only lowered the inner valley of the Rolling Fork southeast of the Narrows some 25 or 30 feet, but an increased depression of this part of the valley can be caused by simultaneous deepening of the Newmarket syncline. A syncline is where the ground drops, as opposed to a fault, which moves up or down. The ground, but it's where the ground drops. The sinking of the southern block some 30 feet or more along the Belltown Fault just above the St. Joseph Bridge of today provided a sizable lake basin in the Rolling Fork Valley above the fault and a barrier of hard, rather insoluble Richmond dolomites on the north or opposite side of the disturbance. The waters of the Rolling Fork impounded behind this rock barrier at a level of 660 or 670 feet and began at once filling the lowest points of the lake bed where the lagoons are now with silt, sand, and gravel. While the lake itself, through the wave action, began to cutting out broad flat beaches in the New Albany black shale along the sinuous shoreline. As the outfalling clear waters of the Rolling Fork Lake gradually trenched the present-day little gorge into the hard dolomite limestones on the upthrow side of the Belltown Fault, the waters of the lake itself, which originally extended, in all probability, in the channel of the river as far east as the vicinity of the fork, he's talking about Bradfordsville there,
okay,
were gradually lowered and then finally in recent times completely drained, leaving the broad beaches as terraces, the bottom set lands and gravels as the lagoons as they are today, and the short but narrow gorge at the Narrows, as long enduring features to mark an extinct lake of the late Pleistocene. The Belltown Fault starts on Highway 49 about from Red Light downtown on Main Street out to out 49 to where the new cut is. It's about 2.7, maybe 2.8 miles, and you'll get halfway down the new cut, and you'll notice some laminated limestone on your left. Somewhere about between half and three-quarters of the way down, there's the rock fault, there's the grade on the laminated rock at a lower level down there is more like 15 or 20%. So somewhere in that area is about where the fault is, where it starts. Then it goes in front of the knob. When you come over that hill to go down that hill, you'll see a knob on your right, and that's one of the knobs. There's two of them actually right there in that area, but that's one of the knobs. At the foot of that knob, the one right beside it on the left is where Fagan Branch is located.
Are you looking at one of those maps you brought me?
Yeah. Anyway, once again, if you look at this on Google Earth, you can see it very well. And then you come on across that area, and the fault line goes in front of Hayden Materials on the front side of that knob, and then on over to Twin Knobs on the front side. And then at that point, you'll come over to Hawk Knob, which is right just to the right of Highway 68 if you're coming down from Lebanon. Okay, so when you get to the McElroy Pike and you turn right, you're going to continue riding right along the base of the fault line along the Belltown Knobs that goes all the way over to St. Joe to that area of the Narrows. So at some point millions of years ago, the earth lifted and raised that entire area, and that's what you've got. And then, as Professor Gilson says, over time the area behind those knobs started sinking, and that's what created the Lagoons Lake. If you're sitting on the bridge at St. Joe, especially in the wintertime, and there's no leaves, Billy Clemens Bluff is about, I think Billy Clemens Bluff at the Narrows is about 575 foot altitude. And right across the river on the other side is Ham Spalding's Bluff, which is about 600 foot altitude. So that's where the original dam stood, and backed all the waters up all the way to Bradfordsville.
Let me ask you something. I've seen in a lot of your stuff, you talk about the Ham Spalding Bluff and the Bobby Clements Bluff.
Billy
Clements, I'm sorry. Are they facing each other on either side of the narrows?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's what I wasn't clear about. I see it right here on the map. So it's just a little bit north of St. Joe.
Right.
Gotcha.
Easy to see when the leaves are off the trees.
Yeah. Okay.
And easy to see why it has the name The Narrows.
Yeah, right.
Something that occurred to me as well is Jellison is talking about that at one point I'll get to Jellison's notes on that in a minute, but he makes a point that at one time that the Rolling Fork River has always essentially traveled in the same path. Maybe some variation due to erosion on one side or the other, but basically the same. And I guess a question that I've had is, because we know from St. Joe all the way to Hyardstown, down through that valley, the ground is basically flat. So I've wondered if there was some kind of a waterfall down below that area, or a long range of cascading rocks for that water to go down and go back down into the bottom land, because land below there was not lifted. It went to that St. Joe area and on into Ham Spalding's Bluff, I guess. And in fact, you can see that on Google Earth as well, but on down behind Mr. Spalding's farm in the bottom lands, that Belltown Fault basically goes in the ground. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you a question? This is a little bit general, but it occurred to me some time ago, I can't think of one natural lake in the state of Kentucky, except the little bit of Realfoot Lake down in the far west. Most of it's in Tennessee, and it was created by, the 1811 New Madrid Fault eruption.
Right.
Kentucky is known, it has second only to Alaska in navigable streams, I believe, but not a lot of lakes. Is that because of the karst? You know, we have what they call a karst geology, which is a lot of sink. Think about sinkholes. Water won't stay. It's going to go underground. But obviously at this one time anyway, maybe this, the lagoons is unique in Kentucky, that at one time we did have a natural lake.
Oh, I definitely think it was, it occurred naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was, based on his description, it was a perfect, setup to create a lake in that area.
Yeah.
We'll get over in a few minutes to the map description, too, and I'll talk a little bit more about, the depth of the water and things. But have I covered everything on the Belltown Fault here?
Yeah, I think so.
But once again, folks, you can get a great view and a great perspective of that Belltown Fault on Google Earth, if you'll just do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, over to the back to the lake itself, and James and I are fortunate enough to have the maps we're looking at, and you don't. But I'll do my best I can to describe to you what that looks like. But so the dam was right there below the bridge at St. Joe, and then the water backed up into the bottoms there. But St. Joe, most of St. Joe was covered underwater, except the ridge line that the houses are sitting on in St. Joe. Everything to all the bottom land looking, I guess, southeast was covered in water. Most of Newmarket was covered in water. Jesseytown was covered in water. Calvary was covered. Greenbrier was covered. And parts of Bradfordsville were. The lake is probably about 10 to 12 miles in length as far as we know, but Professor Gilson also mentions at one time it may have been, a larger lake than it, than what he's drawn out.
Well, and it's curious, given its situation, they talked several decades ago, they were going to dam up Howardstown and Stiles and all that area. And that's is that connected to it, or is there something?
I don't think there's any connection.
Okay.
And the lake that they were talking about doing at Hyardstown would have been much, much larger than this lake.
Oh, I see.
As I recall.
Gotcha.
Anyway, I mentioned the altitudes there at the Narrows previously on the Clemens and Spalding Bluff. If we back up into Phillips Ford, Gilson picked up an altitude, and he called it channel level, so I'm taking this, that's the water, the height of the water, but he picked up, or he had recorded 580-foot altitude. I went to Google Earth some time back and sat down on the roadway, street view, where I thought the water line might have been. You can do the same thing. I picked up 615 feet, which is just a little higher than what he had, but I'm in a little bit different area as well. But so that looks to me like that's pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. He gets up around New Market, and he's recording depths of 610 foot, 585 foot, and 630 foot. And then the water starts to taper on back when you get up around Calvary and Greenbrier, more shallow water. Right there in the bottoms above St. Joe, the deepest part of those bottoms, the water in that area was about 2 miles wide on average. And then the next time you're down there, take a look at that. I mean, that was a pretty wide body of water. And then it kind of averaged about 2 miles wide all the way up to New Market. And then from New Market, it starts to taper back toward Calvary and Greenbrier. And it gets back there, it gets to be about a mile wide on average, tapered on into Bradfordsville. Something that's interesting that you can do, if you're right there on the bridge in New Market, looking toward Jesseytown, right there at the end of the bridge, you'll notice those hills across the bottoms there with flat tops on them. And those are the terraces that Professor Gilson's talking about, and beaches. And they're scattered all up and down that valley, but that's a good place to see that. And that gives you an idea of the height of the water in that area.
For additional information about this episode or to check out previous episodes, please go to MarionCountyPublicLibrary.org.